You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
There are pro-democracy rallies planned across the country. Polls show that voters are angry. Stephen Harper's decision to prorogue Parliament for 5 weeks has lit a fire under Canadians in a way that must have the Conservative Party scratching its head. After all, Jean Chrétien prorogued Parliament back in 2003 in order that he wasn't in power when the sponsorship scandal hit, and he pretty much got away with it. Not only that, the last time Stephen Harper called the prorogation, he did it to make sure his government wouldn't fall, and many people applauded. So why the uproar this time? To help us answer that question, we've contacted Duff Conacher. He's the coordinator of Democracy Watch in Ottawa. Hello, Duff.
Hi, Jane.
So why are people so up in arms about what Stephen Harper did?
I think it's the proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back. Not the back of the Conservatives necessarily, because there's many other things that people are upset about from actions and inactions of this government. But that broke the voters' backs in terms of tolerance of some of the things that the Conservatives have been doing. And so it's certainly not the most important abuse of power or a broken promise or sort of bad government activity of the Conservatives, but just something that's become the lightning rod the focus of the anger, and allows people essentially to complain about all sorts of different reasons why the prorogation, the shutting down of Parliament, shouldn't happen, including the fact that most people are working pretty hard trying to make a living and recovering from this financial crisis that's hit so many people very badly through no fault of their own. And here is Harper saying, oh, well, your MPs are still going to get paid, but we're going to shut down Parliament for an extra 5 weeks so they don't have to really do any work.
Now, there are a number of theories floating around about why he did this. What do you think is behind it?
Well, I think the overall aim is to set up the possibility of calling a snap election after the Olympics when Parliament would open again with a speech from the throne from the Conservatives, which would essentially lay out an election platform. And they would introduce a budget soon after, which would essentially lay out their spending plan, and then call a snap election and head off with their platform all done and try and catch the other parties off guard and get a couple of weeks into the election campaign with some momentum, coming off of, as well, the Olympics, where they're hoping for lots of golden moments that will lend themselves to the Conservatives sort of sharing the stage with these athletes, even though they have very little to do with the fact that any athlete's going to win gold or any other medal in the competitions in the Olympics. So just trying to get that bounce off after the Olympics. But there's many other more minor reasons that are tactical and strategic as well.
So people have said the Afghan detainee hearings, Senate appointments, do you think those have validity, those possibilities, those theories?
Yes, there are several investigations going on now, and they are involved parliamentary committees or officers of Parliament, and when Parliament is prorogued, those things can't operate. I mean, the officers of Parliament, the good government watchdogs, can still do their investigations, but they can't report unless there's a Parliament to report to. Parliamentary committees, they can continue digging by filing access to information requests, as can the media and citizen groups. But in terms of actually having hearings in Parliament where they can subpoena witnesses and force people to disclose information, they can't do any of that while Parliament's shut down. And so, again, if you're trying to set up an election call, you don't want a bunch of reports coming out, and there's investigations now by the Ethics Commissioner and by the Information Commissioner and others. You don't want a bunch of those reports showing that you've done bad things coming out just before you call an election. So that's another reason, but the overall overarching reason, I think, is to set up the possibility, not that it's sure, but the possibility of calling a spring election if conditions look favorable, a snap election that, in Democracy Watch's point of view, would again be in violation of the fixed election date law that the Conservatives introduced and that Parliament passed a couple of years ago.
Well, I was going to just ask you that, because as you said, they did set that, and then this would be the second time that he would have violated that law.
Yes, and talking about the Senate appointments, just briefly, that would also be the second time he will have appointed senators in violation of his promise not to do so until Senate reform had happened. But that is another secondary reason for proroguing Parliament. All of the committees in Senate get reset, and if Harper appoints enough senators, then the Conservatives will have a majority in the Senate for the first time in more than 15 years, and then that will help him pass legislation through, including Senate reform bills that he wants put through. In terms of calling a snap election in the spring, Democracy Watch has an appeal going right now that we've filed in the Federal Court of Appeal of a federal court judge's ruling last September that said that the snap election call was not a violation of the fixed election date law that Parliament passed in 2007. And this is, we were challenging the snap election call in September 2008 that Harper did. And so we're appealing that because we think the judge got it wrong in every way. But it's unlikely our appeal could be heard before early March. And so if the Federal Court of Appeal agrees with Democracy Watch and says that these snap elections are illegal, well, if Harper calls another election, snap election, before the Federal Court of Appeal makes that ruling, then technically he would be getting away with it because it's not clearly illegal right now because of this federal court judge ruling in September that his snap election call in 2008 was okay. So, again, another reason to sort of move towards an election earlier than later before he gets caught in another way breaking a promise or violating a law.
What effect does prorogation have on the work of the House of Commons? You mentioned in the Senate all the committees are reset, but in the House of Commons, what happens?
Well, every bill that the government, the Conservatives, have introduced essentially gets shut down and returned to the initial step of review, so they'd have to reintroduce them all. Private members' bills introduced by opposition MPs or just conservative backbench MPs continue. So there's this bill that had been approved by the House to and was on its way to committee to shut down the gun registry, and that bill would return at the same stage of review. But with government bills, they can also be returned to the same stage of review if all MPs agree. And what happens is all the bills are reintroduced by the Conservatives when Parliament opens again, and then there's a resolution passed. And if all MPs agree, then those bills are sent to whatever stage they were at, so sent back to committee or sent on to the Senate, whatever stage they were at. So that's been something that a lot of people have had an inaccurate impression of, that all these bills would be stopped and have to be returned to stage one. Not necessarily. If all MPs agree, then the bills will move back to their same stage of review. And that change in the rules was put in place because Jean Chrétien was proroguing Parliament so much during his 10-year reign. And so they didn't want to waste all that time of the parliamentary review, and so they made this change to the rules that allows bills to return back to the same stage of review. And there's little reason to believe that the opposition MPs would oppose returning most of those bills back to the same stage of review, because it would be the most efficient thing to do.
Now, the last Liberal majority government fell on the heels of a patronage scandal. Have subsequent governments done anything to address the issue of patronage?
No, and that was one of the big promises and one of the most important promises of the Conservatives' Accountability Act. Overall, with the Accountability Act, the Conservatives promised about 60 accountability and democratic reforms. And they've tried to implement about half of those. And they have actually made 22 changes overall. But the other half they left out. And one of the things that they left out was they put in the Accountability Act that Cabinet may establish a public appointments commission, which would advertise and screen candidates for Cabinet appointments. And they didn't say, the bill should have said, Cabinet shall establish this commission. Because it said may, Cabinet doesn't have to do it. And even though the Accountability Act was passed by Parliament in December 2006, here we are more than 3 years later, and we still don't have that public appointments commission. And the reason we don't is that you can change government policy and laws without changing the laws or policy. All you have to do is change the person who enforces them, because a lot of laws have vagueness in them, and if you change the person and that person interprets the law in a different way, then you've essentially changed the way the law is enforced, and that's the most important thing. So the Conservatives have been appointing party hacks and loyalists and people not qualified to do the jobs to a bunch of agencies, boards, commissions, and tribunals that enforce very important laws across Canada. And by doing so, they've been changing the laws, because the enforcement attitudes of those people are different than the enforcement attitudes of other commissioners and agency heads in the past. And that's why they haven't put in place the commission, is they want to. This one of the major ways they can change the federal government is through the appointments that they make, and they don't want any screen. And so they've broken their promise on setting up this independent commission that would screen candidates and make sure that people who are appointed are actually qualified.
Do you think Harper miscalculated?
With the prorogation?
Yeah.
Yes, although you could say he's miscalculated in a whole bunch of other steps, because, again, I think it's sort of the symbol, the lightning rod, the straw that breaks the camel's back of the voters' tolerance of what Harper's done. So there's a whole bunch of other miscalculations, such as breaking half of his government accountability promises and being so secretive, one of the major areas of accountability that they have actually taken steps backwards, being dishonest in a bunch of other promises that they made that they didn't keep, such as taxing income trusts. So all those things have added up and added up. And then to do it the way that he did it over the holidays, and just suddenly without any notice, essentially saying to Canadians, oh, I don't think you're paying any attention to the government, you're disengaged, you're turned off, you're enjoying your holidays, so I'll just be able to get away with this. It just shows such arrogance that I think people look at that one, and it ends up becoming a lightning rod for all their frustrations and concerns about what this federal government has done and what the Conservatives have done since they've been in power 4 years ago.
It's ironic, really, because one of the things that people always used to say about the Liberal government when it was in power for so long was how arrogant it was.
Yeah, and it's very surprising I don't think if you asked Harper, oh, you want to remain as a minority government, you don't want a majority, he would say, oh yeah, no, minority's fine, I don't want to have absolute power, having to share power with the opposition parties, that's great with me. And if you asked the other opposition party leaders, they would say too, we want a majority as well. And then he does these things that moves him away from a majority. 60% of Canadians are upset about this prorogation, according to two polls that have been released. That's not surprising, because more than 60% of voters voted against the Conservatives last election, so all those people upset could be just Liberals, Green, NDP, Bloc supporters. But they're not, actually, because one of the pollsters asked people who they had voted for last election, and one-third of people who voted for the Conservatives last time are upset about this prorogation, think it's unjustified and undemocratic as well. So he's really shot himself in the foot by upsetting his own core voters with this kind of move, and with other moves, because a lot of those voters voted Conservative hoping that they would actually keep their promise to clean up the government. And again, Harper's broken half of his accountability promises. And then the calling the snap election as well upset people, again, because it just goes against the word of the Prime Minister so much that it chips away at the trust. And if a leader doesn't have the trust of voters, then the leader's not going to get away with much and going to be suspected in every action that they do. So very surprising. Surprising as well, though, to see that the opposition parties haven't taken up a lot of these other accountability issues and other things and really set out alternatives. The Liberals seem to be trying to get back into power without making promises to clean up or make the government more democratic. And I don't think they're going to get away with that, because Canadians are very upset about these issues. They know that everyone in the government can effectively act dishonestly, unethically, secretively, unrepresentatively, and wastefully, and they're sick of it, and they want it cleaned up.
It's been good talking to you this morning, Duff.
Thanks very much for your interest. Have a good rest of the weekend.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye for now.
I've been speaking with Duff Conacher. He's coordinator of Democracy Watch, and that organization is based in Ottawa.